I'm Jo Reed, and this is a bonus edition of Behind the Mic with Audiophile Magazine.
"This Naomi," Hester said, "she's your friend?" Matthew shrugged, as only a teenager can. "I've known her since we were like 6. Not a direct answer, but she'd allow it. "How long has she been missing?"
"For like a week."
"Like 6, like a week." It drove Hester crazy. The likes, the you knows, but now was hardly the time.
"Did you try to call her?"
"I don't know her phone number."
"Are the police looking for her?"
Teenage shrug.
"Did you talk to her parents?"
"She lives with her dad."
"Did you speak to her dad?"
He made a face as though that was the most ridiculous thing imaginable.
"So how do you know she's not sick or away on vacation or something?"
No reply.
"What makes you think she's missing?"
You just heard actor Steven Weber reading Harlan Coben's latest book, The Boy from the Woods. Steven Weber has a long resume on stage, screen, and television. He became best known to most people when he played the part of Brian on the television show Wings in the 1990s. Since then, he's appeared in scores of television shows and movies, including Stephen King's Desperation, Brothers and Sisters, NCIS New Orleans, and most recently, playing a stoner grandfather on the series Indebted. His movie career is equally varied, from The Flamingo Kid to Leaving Las Vegas to Crawl Space, to providing the voice in a number of animated films. I'm just touching on the surface of his work. His resume runs on for pages. He's a busy actor who's known to work on multiple projects at the same time. So how did he begin to record audiobooks and record them fairly regularly with some 40 titles under his belt? What attracted him to the world of audiobooks?
I'd always liked the idea of recording. I always have been a fan of classic radio, and even growing up, had record albums of all the old shows from Jack Benny to, you know, Gangbusters and all that stuff, and really, really loved the whole aesthetic of it, the idea of holding a cupped hand to your ear or standing next to a big microphone, all that stuff. Foley sound effects. And at the beginning of my career, to make ends meet, I somehow fell into doing looping for foreign films and replacing dialogue for actors if they were cursing. I had to imitate their voices and fill in, you know, if they dropped an F-bomb, I would have to say fudge or something like that. And so again, that got me more involved in recording, and I can't remember what the first book I did, but I just, again, love the whole idea. It's very basic and very old-fashioned, retro, and I just love what I'm doing now, sitting in a cool, quiet studio speaking into a microphone. But then I found doing audiobooks, the more I did them, and it's happening right now, the more I do them, the more I understand what needs to be done. And, of course, I've always been a fan of audiobooks myself.
How do you go about preparing for narrating an audiobook?
Unfortunately, the reality is I don't. I have to be candid here. I mostly do cold reads. I know what the book is about. I try to read a summary. And if I have the time, I will glance through it to see if I'm going to get in trouble or not. You know, for instance, if I start a character and then I realize halfway through that that character has had a lisp or has had a thick Romanian accent, then I think, ugh, what a schmuck. I should have pre-read it. But frequently, the books I read are lengthy. And since I have a limited attention span, I just go for it. I've had some success with this rather lazy method. But on the other hand, I like to think that it provides some spontaneity and there's genuine excitement for me. But the thing about the writing is that it is like a map. When you read, it's following a map and you pretty much know where you're going or know how to walk the route, put it that way. So I really don't do much preparation.
You've narrated a bunch of Harlan Coben's books. Have you talked to him?
We actually became friends. I think I actually read one of his books on my own, and in the back of the book, there's an email address where one could contact him. So I sent him a fan letter, and he responded, to my shock. And I said, my God, I'd love to be able to read one of your books. And so one thing led to another, and I started reading his audiobooks. And we have spoken a little bit about the characters. I realize now, having done a bunch of them, that my initial approaches to them probably could have used more preparation. I mean, I would love to go back and re-record the first few books in the Myron Bolitar series. There's a couple of characters in there where I just did not have a handle on them, and I would love to redo them. One of them is a great character named Wynn, and Wynn is this super wealthy sociopath who's also a bit of a master at all these defense disciplines and martial arts, and he's a real scary and lovable companion to Myron Bolitar and his adventures. But I rendered him in a kind of a cartoonish, almost Thurston Howell III way. And I sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night thinking, oh, why did I do that? I should have done it better. But he and I really have not spoken that much about the roles. He seems to be happy with what I'm doing, and I'll just take that.
Now, keeping the voices straight throughout a series, that becomes difficult. Or did you adjust them in the case of Wynn a little bit as you went on?
What happens, I find that they're more or less steady. The opening impressions are a little stronger than what happens gradually later. They all seem to become a little more relaxed. What I found for me, what works for me, is that when playing a bunch of characters, even in one scene, and I play male characters and female characters and characters with accents and young characters and old characters, instead of affecting a broad choice, speaking like this, for instance, it's supposed to be feminine, but not really. I just do things with cadence and with a little differences in pitch, in pronunciation, to affect a difference that I think expresses the character's gender or age or even size, you know. But it can get a little confusing if there are a bunch of characters interacting, especially for a long period of time in one scene or in one chapter. That could be a little challenging. But look, that's the beauty of having great directors and great engineers. We stop and we assess. And we go back and we figure it out and try to make it as clear as possible.
I recently listened to the latest one that you did of Coben's, The Boy from the Woods, which was exactly what I needed because, you know, sometimes you're obsessively listening to podcasts these days. And to be able to fall into that book was just such a gift. So that was wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
But the voices were wonderful. I mean, Hester, what a character you created there.
Hester, yeah. Hester is definitely a combination of people that I grew up with and people that I've been around my whole life.
Me too. Yeah. I really recognized her.
Yeah. You know, that incredibly strong woman who's been around, but there's still kind of a gooey heart inside, you know, gooey center. She's tough. You don't mess with her.
She was a frequent legal expert on cable news, and two nights a week, famed defense attorney Hester Krimstein had her own segment on this very network called Krimstein on Crime. The punch video was already over, and hipster Rick Chad was foaming at the mouth. See? Spittle flew out of his mouth and found a home in his beard. It's clear as day. Your rich client attacked a homeless man for no reason. You don't know what went on before that tape rolled. It makes no difference. Sure it does. That's why we have a system of justice, so that vigilantes like you don't irresponsibly call for mob violence against an innocent man. Whoa, nobody said anything about mob violence. Sure you did. Own it already. You want my client, a father of three with no record, in prison right now. No trial, nothing. Come on, Rick Chad.
Let your inner fascist out.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know, that's the funny thing about Harlan's books is that there's so much love in them. There's plenty of intrigue, great action, and humor, too. But, man, when characters love each other in his books, it's so meaningful. There's been many times during recording where I'll get choked up, and so will the engineer or director. We all kind of stop, and we comment on it, and we say, wow, I love reading his stuff.
Yeah, he's wonderful, and it's wonderful listening to you read his stuff.
Thank you so much.
No, not at all. But, you know, with Harlan's books and with others that you've done too, because it's one thing doing the voices, but there's also this narrative through line, you know, that action has to keep moving forward. The pacing and creating tension in the narrative that you need to do as the narrator. Is it instinctual how you go about doing that?
It's mostly instinctual, but also there's a technical, something that I learned, or rather was taught in college. There was a great book called The Art of Interpretation that I took as an addendum to my my acting, my theater program. I went to State University in New York at Purchase, SUNY Purchase, as it's known. And in my acting class, we studied this book called The Art of Interpretation, which spoke about the techniques and the challenge of presenting material, literature, even just speeches, motivation speeches, on stage at a lectern in a presentational form. And one of the things was to, I think, match the action as written as much as one can. So years back, I did Stephen King's It.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Which has gotten a lot of acclaim. And one of the things that happened, because it's such a long damn book, was that you begin to fall into the rhythms as he writes. And so during chase scenes, you are out of breath and moving fast. And during the more intimate, quiet scenes, you slow down and it becomes more quiet and close. And so and mostly it's a function of the writing. Again, it's the map that you follow. You just find yourself running when things speed up. But I also realize that I'm learning. I've had the luxury of learning while I'm working. My early stuff, I don't think, was paced properly. I was going for clarity rather than more emotional truth. But the more I have done it, the more relaxed I've become. And the more I realize that readers can follow you as long as you're telling the truth, as long as you're being faithful to the word, you don't have to be as slow or clear as this, you know, because people can hear you.
I want to go back to Stephen King's It for just one moment. I don't like being scared. And when I said to my housemate, I'm listening to Stephen King, and he just looked at me and he said, how's that working for you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, interestingly enough, and I did it a long time ago, but I remember doing it, especially when doing Pennywise the Clown. I don't know where I was going with that, but I let myself go deep and dark. And I tried to do things vocally that do scare me, that if I ever heard them, I really would just get the hell out of there. That was really the only time I could say I kind of contacted a place in myself that, ooh, you know, I'm not sure I wanted to be here too long.
I often listen to audiobooks as I walk my dogs, but with It, at a certain point, it's just like, I'm not listening to this on the night walk at all anymore.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's all right. It was good. You were good. My comment about it was, you are not afraid to go big.
I think I needed to. First of all, it's 1,200 pages. You know, and a lot of people are familiar with the story, and it's Stephen King. You can't shirk.
He laughed aloud, the sound of solitary, childish glee, a bright runner in that gray afternoon, as a vagary of the flowing water took his paper boat into a scale model rapids,
which had been formed by the break in the tar. The urgent water had cut a channel which ran along the diagonal, and so his boat traveled from one side of Witcham Street to the other, the current carrying it so fast that George had to sprint to keep up with it. Water sprayed out from beneath his galoshes in muddy sheets. Their buckles made a jolly jingling as George Dembro ran toward his strange death.
I'm curious about, as an actor, the difference when it's just your voice and you don't have any physicality to create a character. If you can describe that, I'd be very curious to hear about that.
Well, I guess it's a little difficult because as an actor, you use every facet, every tool in your kit. But when you're confined to having your voice as the only tool, for me, it's a little harder to estimate if I'm getting the point across or if I'm expressing something properly. Frequently, I will overdo it, thinking that if I don't have my body in play, then I'd better indicate as such vocally. And that is often a mistake. I just think it has to do with imagination. And again, my love of radio and voice acting, which dates back to my youth, I think has helped me find a reasonable way of acting using only my voice. Again, it's been a learning experience. I've had to figure out what to do and what not to do. But I don't know if I could list the ingredients of how one does it. One of my favorite readers was Frank Muller, and I got into him after just hearing his name, really, or reading his name. And I listened to some Dickens. I listened to A Tale of Two Cities that he did, and Moby Dick I listened to, and it's incredible. And he, to me, is the master of everything that I aspire to be in audio book world. He had great clarity, but wasn't afraid of pace. And also his way of characterizations was very subtle, but absolutely clear and defined.
Exactly. The man could tell a story.
Yes, and didn't hurt to have this kind of velvety, whiskey voice.
He had a beautiful voice.
That was an approximation of it.
The toolbox is smaller. You just have your voice. But then again, you have a far greater range of characters you can play.
Well, yes. And look, that is one of the great beauties of being a voice actor primarily. I know people who do lots of animation, and they rarely look like the characters they portray. And to me, that's the best definition of what an actor should be. It's the ability to play any character if you can. It is one of the beauties of being an audio voice actor. And look, doing these books, Harlan's books and all the other books that I've done, have given me a great opportunity to play women.
To play Hester.
To play, you know, a feisty Jewish woman, but, you know, is an ass kicker. I don't think I would be up for that role in real life.
Well, theater, film, television, there's such collaborative arts. And then you're in a booth recording, and perhaps you're working with a director or an engineer, but basically you're doing it on your own. You're not reacting to somebody, or somebody isn't reacting to you. If you can talk about the difference about doing it on your own versus working as an actor in a company with others.
Well, there is a solitary and even meditative aspect to doing audiobooks. You're right, as you describe it. You're sitting in a frequently small booth, separated from another human being by soundproof glass. There's something incredibly calming about it. It forces a kind of introspection that's very basic to being an artist in a way. Nobody is born on stage in the middle of an ensemble. You develop an affinity or a desire to express yourself creatively by yourself in play, often solitary play. And it expands as you grow older to imaginary play with other friends and role play and all that stuff. And the differences between working in a theater company are obvious. And yet you're still employing that same component of imagination, except with more people who are doing the same thing. And hopefully when they intersect, they do so with sensitivity and excitement. And I guess frequently they do. Yeah, you're your own master sitting in a booth. But also you have to understand that after you're done with it, the recording is given to other gifted artists like the editor, the sound editor, the producer, and there's other things that go into it. There's music, there's presentation, there's mixing. All those things require craft and technique. So it's never solely you. I mean, I guess the voice actor obviously gets the lion's share of attention. But if it weren't for everybody else who's involved in the recording process, we wouldn't exist.
It's like serial collaboration.
It is. It's a different kind of collaboration, yeah.
It's a collaboration that happens sequentially.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Well, with LA Theater Works, the production of A Walk in the Woods with Alfred Molina, it was just your voice, but you got to use it in very good company.
I did. And also we did it in front of an audience, which is also fun and also reminiscent of those kind of old vintage radio shows, again, which I've always loved. I love the idea of sitting in an audience and watching actors on stage, cupping their ears and holding a script and standing in front of a microphone and interacting in a very special way and in a different way. And it actually requires the audience to do work as well. It's not passive. They've got to fill in the blanks.
Describe the premise of LA Theater Works productions in general for people who might not know.
LA Theater Works, for decades now, have presented classic plays, I think some original works as well, in a radio format. And they attract great actors, great directors, and basically they are the kind of radio touring company of theater. They've even taken their productions overseas and performed them in front of foreign audiences using the same kind of radio premise where the actors enter and exit on stage to stand at microphones, and then there's a Foley guy or Foley gal, Foley being the people that do the live sound effects on stage that accompany the action. And LA Theater Works has been a fantastic resource for people who miss or can't get to great plays that are both current and classic. And like I say, it attracts great talent in many ways because it's an easier way of producing a play. It's not 6 weeks or 8 weeks of rehearsal. It's a couple of days of rehearsal, and then you start doing it, standing in a microphone and recording. And a lot of the time, they are done live, like I say, in front of audiences.
Andre, I appreciate your desire to become friends. Indeed, in many of my former negotiations, I did become friends with those on the other side, after a successful settlement, not before.
I see.
I think it's important for us both to remember that there are issues here.
Of course.
Which must be resolved.
Certainly.
Making friends is it's a fine thing, but not on someone else's time, so to speak. Do you follow me?
Oh, yes.
When I took this post, it was to bring something new here, a new formula, a breakthrough.
Yes, yes, a breakthrough.
A plan I personally helped develop for more than a year.
Wonderful. Welcome. A new man with a new plan.
I didn't have to come here, you know. I could have stayed behind my desk in Washington. Someone more like McIntyre could have been chosen, but since I have a first-hand knowledge of this proposal, and since I myself have a strong record as a negotiator...
At a lower level.
At a lower level.
And it is really fun, and people love it. And it's not just an old person's game here. It's everybody loves it. One of my favorite stories to tell is that when my two sons, who are now 17 and 19 years old, were younger, I want to say 9 and 11, 10 and 12, I can do math too, I would listen to classic radio as I drove them to school, and they got so into Dragnet from the 50s, okay, with Jack Webb, that frequently, and I'm not exaggerating, frequently, we would have to stay in the car and finish the episode before they wanted to get out of the car. And I was so heartened to realize that it still works. It works. It's the imagination. It's drama. You don't need it played out in front of you. You use your head. You use your heart when you're listening. You bring yourself to it. And it worked on my young sons, Dragnet of all things.
That's fabulous. I wonder how you choose what projects to take on as a narrator.
Well, I mean, I don't have the luxury of choice. They kind of come to me. I'm so grateful for Harlan Coben because he's given me a lot of work, and he seems to like what I'm doing with his books. I've tried to get projects going. I've always wanted to do a re-recording of Spoon River Anthology, and I've been trying to do that. It's one of my favorite collections of poetry, and I think it's really pertinent and beautiful, and I've read it a lot, and I've always wanted to do that. So, I really don't have the luxury of choice. It just comes to me. At the end of the day, I'm an actor, and I just wait for the phone to ring.
Well, the phone rings a lot because you do a lot.
Well, I'm very lucky, but the reality of an actor's life is that for every credit you see listed one after the other, there's months frequently in between each job where you're not doing anything.
I can hear that. I just wonder what your thoughts are about what the attributes of a good narrator might be, whether you're thinking about your own work or other narrators that you listen to.
Oh, boy. First of all, I'm so flattered that I'm even speaking to you about this because I still am learning, trying to figure it all out. But for me, it's humor, it's pace, it's absolutely tone of voice, it's accuracy. I try to be as accurate as possible with pronunciation and names and places, exotic place names, etc. But I think if somebody can really allow themselves as a narrator to get into the heart of a character and a story and not be afraid to go deep and to be emotional rather than just a kind of objective narrator. Narrator, to me, is an inadequate term, especially if you're acting. A narrator is just about exposition to me.
And this is so much more.
It really is. I guess it has to be. The things that I'm very proud of in the audiobook world are the things that people have said that I've managed to move them or scare them or amuse them. And that's a function of obviously the writing, but also allowing myself to go deep and to follow the route and to become the action in a way. If you're running, then you have to be out of breath. If some hideous beast or monster is chasing you, well, then you better be damn scared. And that's important for me, and it's actually fun. It's what I trained to do. So why not do it?
And that's a good place to leave it, I think. Stephen Weber, thank you. And truly, I want to thank you for the Harlan Coben that you narrate. I'm just falling into it, and as I said, right now, it is exactly what I want to hear. So thank you.
No, that's wonderful. He's just a wonderful writer to read and to speak. I encourage anybody who's reading his books to speak them aloud because they are fun. It's really a lot of fun to read.
Yes, I can hear that as I listen to your narration of it. Thank you for giving me your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.
I did as well. Thank you, Stephen. That's actor Stephen Weber. You can find reviews for Stephen's narration of Harlan Coben, Stephen King, and A Walk in the Woods at audiophilemagazine.com. And subscribe to Behind the Mic wherever you get your podcasts. And then leave us a rating on Apple because it really helps people to find us. This has been a bonus edition of Behind the Mic. I'm Joe Reed. Good listening.